Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in the Standard, 4-star review in the Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Michael Ian Black, very famous American comedian, actor, author, really beloved on both sides of the Atlantic. But if I had to pick which continent loves me more, it's got to be North America. Oh, they go nuts for me in North America. Everywhere from... They don't go that nuts for me, really anywhere. But I'll tell you who people do go nuts for: Richard Herring. And this is RHSLTP, which is Richard Herring's thing. I don't know what the rest of it stands for. I was on it, maybe, but I don't know what it stands for. With guest John Kearns. And what can I say about Richard Herring and all the great work that he does playing snooker and sometimes appearing on television on shows that never make it to the States, and building brick walls or stone walls on his property for no apparent reason, and creating puppets out of household everyday objects that really don't seem to have much of a character or purpose. But I tell you what he has done. He has written the best book ever written about the crisis in masculinity, the problem with men, written by himself, Richard Herring, out on November 5th. And you may say, Michael Ian Black, but you've written an incredible book about the crisis in masculinity, and that's true. And you may say, but Michael, your book is better than The Problem with Men, and that's true. So how can you say Richard's is the best book ever written about the crisis in masculinity? And the answer is simple. He's paying me to do it. So I'm happy to say anything for money. And Richard Herring, I would say, even if I wasn't being paid, that The Problem with Men is the best book ever written about the crisis in masculinity. It's out November 5th. Would I have really said it if I wasn't being paid? No.
Thanks to Michael Ian Black there, who will do anything for $80. So do check him out on Cameo. He's a very nice man. We will only torment him for a little bit longer. Just a little bonus extra that you want to watch the next week's Rahulastapa episode 300 now, then you can. It's a very special one. We filmed it at the Bill Murray. I was the guest and John Robbins was the interviewer. We did a podcast and then we did 30 bonus minutes extra of emergency questions sent in by listeners. It was a lot of fun. It was lovely to do one live again. What we're doing, you can view it right now for £8 plus all the extra stuff. And all that money will go to Refuge. All you have to do is go to rahulastapa.co.uk/300. That's rhlstp.co.uk/300, and pay £8, and that money, all the profit of it, so I think PayPal take a little bit of it, will go to Refuge. Also, one person who does that download will get an amazing package of Rahulastapa merchandise, including a Rahulastapa Rubik's Cube that are rarer than hen's teeth and more valuable than that as well, and also more fun to play with. So, if you want to watch that now, rahulastapa.co.uk/300. Hey, look, if you don't want to pay anything or you can't afford to pay anything, it'll be up for free next week. Not the extra half hour, though. If you wait till next week, you can get the extra half hour for £5. You might as well get it all now for £8 and give more money to Refuge. Thanks very much. Now let's sit back, relax and enjoy a very enjoyable Rahulastapa with John Cairns. Hello! Look at that. That's professional. That's professionalism. Everything's been going wrong just before the show. I've got everything set up really nicely and then that disaster happened. Welcome to the show. This is Richard Herring's Looked Over for Sovereign Title podcast. All that stone clearing snooker during lockdown to keep spirits up. Not a fucking nod from the fucking Queen. Stick your MBEs up your ass, Queen Elizabeth II. That's what I say to you. I wouldn't take an MBE unless you offered me one. And you haven't done. All that I've done for this country. But I was talking to Marcus Rashford, MBE, Joe Wicks, MBE, Mr. Motivator, MBE. Mr. fucking Motivator's got an MBE for keeping spirits going during lockdown, and I haven't. They all call it Rahulastapa Mubba'er, but they put the Mubba'er on there as a sarcastic joke because they all have MBEs and I don't have an MBE, despite all my fantastic work for the country. Why did I tell my wife I didn't want an MBA? MBE, why did I do that? I want an MBE. I just want an MBE. That's all I want. We're on Mars, if you're watching the video. If you're listening to the audio, we're on Mars. It's quite nice here. Not much atmosphere. I did a proper joke. I just thought of that just in the second. I've drunk half a bottle of wine because I have no respect for this week's guest. Very exciting. He's very honoured. We've the old notebook. Where have I put that? Here it is. The Strange Thing notebook, what I've forgotten, has a little special sleeve to make it look like a... that is available to buy on eBay if you're quick. There's less than 24 hours left. All the profits from this, all the money from this, everything from this is going to Refuge. If you want to buy this on eBay, it's got Grayson Perry's doodle, an autograph with Alan Measles. It's got autographs of some of the live guests, maybe including today's guest. And I don't think so. I think it started just after he was on last time. I might be wrong. It's currently at £985 on eBay with a day to go. It'd be very exciting if we get more money than that for Refuge. But look, we've got a new specially made notebook. It says Rahulastapa show notes. It's got a picture of me on it. It's got pictures of the guests on the back. It's made by Papier, who have not paid me to advertise them. It costs like £20 or something to make it. But if you're selling them for a grand, you know, keep the money next time, can I? Got to think. So our guest is very honoured to be the first. This is the 299th episode. So close to being the 300th episode that we've done about 400, really. And what else have I got for you? I meant to put this picture. Look, I am drunk. I meant to put that picture up of them when I was talking about them. What's next? Oh, yes. So their government in trouble for this advert. Fatima's next job could be in cyber. Apparently it's from a few years ago in any case.
But I would like to congratulate Dom Cummings for instituting my plan that all dancers and actors should become sex robots. That's basically what he's saying there. And I think Dom Cummings should be the name of the tray you have to pull out to clean from the sex robot. Although they're actually, they'd have to be human beings pretending to be sex robots, which I'm cool with. I should remind you, of course, that my book, The Problem with Men, there's the whole front cover if you're watching the video, is coming out on November the 5th, well in time for November the 19th, which is actually when International Men's Day is. Damn, I've ruined the surprise. Please do pre-order that as a book, an ebook, or a audio book. The audio book is very good value. I think you'll enjoy it. It's available for pre-order. I will be pushing it next week, episode 300. I will be interviewed by John Robbins, who has read the book and believes it to be excellent. I'm glad that he thinks that. We'll be talking about the book and much more besides, I'm sure. And that will be available to download ahead of time if you're prepared to pay some money. And that money will also go to Refuge. What? Am I just the nicest guy in the world? I live on Mars. I don't need money. I live on Mars. And a little addendum to last week's carousel cupboard being stuck. I know last week I revealed that it was opened. And a lot of people got in touch with me to say, what are you doing keeping your pans in there, Richard? That's stupid. You should keep tins and stuff that can't jam up the door. So I put my tins in there, some tins. Look at that. I've got quite a lot of sweet corn. There's some apricots, I think, there. Quite a lot of beans. And the tins fall off and go into the mechanism and jammed it as well. So fuck you, people who said that. You're all idiots. I'm wearing my Relastopper jumper, which I haven't worn for a while, which is on the front page of the front cover of this notebook, which will one day sell for £1,000. And I think next week I'm going to sell this jumper on eBay and raise money for charity as well, because I'm just a brilliant guy. It cost me £500, this jumper. That was my own money. I didn't even put it through any businesses. I just bought it with my own money. I could have offset that against tax, and I didn't. So I'm going to donate that. So it's got to get more than £500. It's got to be worth it. It's a beautiful jumper. Look at that. So do look out for that on eBay. What a chump paying £500 for a jumper. Who the fuck do you think you are? Oh, no, I was a bit late up here. That wasn't the reason we were late starting, because we've got just a problem with this system, but hopefully we'll sort it out. I had to go in. My daughter was awake. And she'd like, was it Joey and Friends? She'd put on all her pajamas and some other shirts and trousers as well. I was wearing about 10 sets of clothing. She was meant to be asleep. So I had to take all but one of her pajamas off before I could come up and do the podcast. She's crazy. I don't know where she gets it from. I do not know where she gets it from. Right. Look, my guest this week, probably best known for his appearance in Stand Up Hero 2010, series one, episode one he was on. Let's find out more about that. Will you please welcome, he's one of my favourite guests we've ever had on. He's got everything to live up to, and now without the white-hot glare of the audience to help him along. It's John Cairns, ladies and gentlemen. Where is he? There he is, look. He's like a medieval painting. Look at him. Well, you're all like black in the background with just your face, like you've been painted by Titian, I'm going to say. Was just a guess. How are you doing, John?
I'm all right. I'm good, Rich. I specifically went to an art gallery to see a Titian.
Did you?
Yeah. I got a...
How was it?
Well, so I like Lucian Freud.
Yeah.
So I did good. I got given a voucher at City Lit. So I did a day course at City Lit about Lucian Freud. And the teacher, I was the only English guy there, weirdly. Everyone else was like Polish and Spanish, weird. But she said Titian was his favourite artist. And the best example of that was in Edinburgh at the National Gallery. And he said it had the best tummy. In this painting, it had the best tummy in the art world.
Okay.
And he also said, the more you look at Titians, the more dogs you see. Anyway, so I went to Edinburgh Art Gallery because I was on tour there last year, and I went and looked at this painting. So,
is there more to it than that? Was it good?
Well, it's one of those, I don't know. It's one of those things where I was looking at it, and it's quite to go to an art gallery to specifically see a painting.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on the painting.
And the painting, everyone's naked as well. All the women are naked, and it's a guy who's stumbling across naked women.
Yeah,
and as a painting, I wish maybe that wasn't the one I was specifically looking for. But yeah, it's true. But also, the painting has like she's pregnant, so her painting's all looks like jelly, and Freud loved that. So. I loved it too, and that's why I look like a Titian.
Okay, that might be well. I'm glad you've put all that effort in, and I'm glad that I recognised the reference so expertly there, right at the start without
it's
prompting.
Also, cholesterol and lighting.
So tell us about Stand Up Hero. Your appearance in Stand Up Hero. I don't know if we've talked about it before. It's your first IMDb.
Is it?
It's the first thing on IMDb. I've gone back quite deep. I found some quite historic bits of John Cairns, but I didn't find a clip of Stand Up Hero. Is this you trying to be a Stand Up Hero, or you?
What year was it?
Is this you? 2010. It says on IMDb. I believe. I think it's like a stand up competition. No memory.
Man. I don't know. Stand Up Hero. Maybe. Yeah.
I mean,
was it FHM Stand Up Hero?
Maybe.
Did I audition for that? Was there a clip? I was working. I had a day job at the time. I don't know. Is that me? I don't remember that being me.
Well, it's in your IMDb. I also found. I found a clip of you from 2008 in the Chortle Student Comedy. I hadn't seen that before. There's one from 2007 as well. Tantalizingly, I mean, you look. Ridiculous in the picture.
I fucking hate those fucking videos.
But
what'd you say?
Tantalizingly, it comes up. It comes up and you can scroll through and see it all, but when you try to play it, it just says this problem with the play, we can't watch it. So I can't see your material.
Really?
I've seen your 2008 material though. Do you remember what you did in 2008?
Well, sorry, what are you gonna have I just logged in to a Zoom chat where you're going to go through material I did when I was 18? I'm glad that other one you can't hear. I'm wearing a
baby. You look so different than I'm not even sure that one is you. You at least start in the 2008 one, you look a bit like you.
Yeah, I know.
But in the 2007, you don't look like you. I don't know, between 2007 and 2008, you went on some kind of health kick, visits to the gym and stuff. I mean, you don't look good in 2008. But 2007, it looks like you might not make two. I was wondering if, you know, like Paul McCartney, the original John Cairns, died in 2007 and you took over in 2008, just took over the franchise.
I'm wearing a, fuck me. The thing is, I'm sure you have it, but you look back and, you know, I'm with a girlfriend then. But I know what I'm wearing. That clip haunts you because when you're 18, it's a Chortle thing. And Steve Bennett, he just shoves a bit of paper on your nose, goes, sign that. You're like, well, yeah, I don't give a shit. Cut to 10 years later, you're like, well, how do I get this taken down?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, it is. I'm not, people can go and look at it if they want.
That's the, well, I don't have much up there. So that still is probably the longest clip of me doing stand up. It's me wearing like a pink. I'm wearing like a pink and white striped shirt. I'm wearing a baby blue jumper. Wow. I'm clean shaven. Haircut is too short, and I'm doing material. I remember to know.
Doesn't get much of a response. I think, but it's interesting because you're young enough that your early stuff exists. On the internet. So like that's what I was lucky enough that, I mean, some of the radio stuff, I guess I did from the early 90s is still findable if you really want to find it. But if I'd had the internet when I was at university, I would have 100% put all my sketches up online and they were all terrible.
Well, yeah. I mean, do you know, like, when, you know, like Palin or something, he goes, I've donated all my notebooks to this university and they've got every scrap of paper I've ever written on.
Yeah.
If anyone ever went to me, can you give us your notebooks, please? I'm going, yeah, yeah, sure. Wait there. I'm shutting the front door and I'm burning the house down. There's no way in hell anyone's looking in my notebooks. The stuff I've, the stuff, you know, you look back at them, you know, when you're looking through old stuff going, maybe there's something in here. Maybe there's something I should have stuck with. And you stumble across a page. You're like, fuck me. What was going on then? I've gone mad. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't write material on a laptop. I just write.
Yeah, I do. I don't write stand up. I don't write my stand up down there.
They say, I don't know. There's a chain of thought that your writing style dictates your, so like, Dickens, he wrote, with like ink and, like, parchment and like a feather or something.
Yeah, probably.
So, like, they say he wrote long paragraph, long sentences because of the time it took for him to get to the ink and then to him to go back to the paper.
Right.
And then Steinbeck, is it? He wrote on a typewriter. So his staccato style may have been influenced by how he wrote.
Yeah.
Right, you're doing what you did last time where I'm giving you a fact and you just leave it. Most normal people go, oh, that's interesting. Or, like,
wait, you've left an up inflection. Someone on YouTube today said, I talk over the guests too much. He said, maybe that's because, you know, you're online, it's difficult to work out when they're talking. Yes, it fucking is, you stupid prick. But I've decided to sarcastically leave bit long pauses just to show that guy what a cunt he is.
Well,
you're going to be the victim of it. I'm not going to talk over you. Don't talk because I'm not going to talk over you. Don't start talking now, John Ken. I'm talking now. Don't talk over me. I'm going to leave sarcastically long gaps to show him how wrong he is. But also, you made it sound like you were about to come on. So Dickens did this, Steinbeck did this. It's the rule of three. And then I thought you were going to say, and what I do is...
Oh, well, what I do is I write on post-it notes. Okay. I think if I can get an idea on a tiny square, then it's a good idea. Also, I don't believe that bollocks about you reading a YouTube comment and someone said, why are you talking
it's
over
true.
You?
It's true.
Well, what?
I'm talking over you. Look, I'm talking over you. He'll be furious.
But you did it in Winchester. And you were just staring at me. You don't want to talk over the laughter as people go, who the fuck's this guy? He's been dragged all the way down here. It's pissing with rain. And fuck me.
Look, I've had you back on because I feel... Like, I had you on Edinburgh, and you were the last guest of the Edinburgh run, and I feel like I felt like I was wasting your time, and I was a bit disrespectful to you. And then I had you, then I made you come to Winchester, and just the devil in me thought I'll waste his time again. I'll just do it one more time.
I just like the idea. I never actually ever get asked to do Leicester Square. Have you done Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast? Yeah, I've done it about three times now. All right, where have you done it? Leicester Square? No, Edinburgh, Winchester, and then my house.
That's not my fault. You can't pin that on me. That one's my fault.
No, that's true, actually.
So I just thought I'd like to apologise for the disrespect I've shown you. I think that it's two times. I wouldn't do it. It's not like I'm going to get you out here a third time just to waste some more of your time doing this. I'm going to treat you with respect. I mean, I'm sure...
All right, where's this going? Immediately, I'm thinking, you're going to ask me about if there's a second Top Coppers series or something. I've been waiting. I've been doing press-ups over that question. That's become more famous than the bloody show. Oh, Top Coppers. Yeah, that's the question Richard Herring asked you if it was coming back 5 years later. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was a show as well. Don't forget that. Yeah, but I only heard of it because Richard Herring couldn't stop laughing, asking if it was coming back. Oh, right. Okay. Well, you can watch it on the director's website because the BBC haven't got it either. Bond? Well.
No, I was. That was the furthest thing from my mind. I was thinking about how COVID must have hit you quite hard. I imagine. I don't know anything about your personal life, but I'm just guessing. And, you know, also, it must have really disrupted the filming of the new series of
Top
Cop.
There we go. I'm glad I'm absolutely... I smelt it. Stand up for hero. I don't know. You made that up. I've never even heard of it. You're trying to get me into the... You know, you put a bit of cheese outside the mouse hole. I'm like, stand up, hero. Is that me? Bang! No,
I imagine there's a lot in the can, and then just you need to do the reverse shots, and then just COVID hit, and you've been waiting. But the other bloke's doing well, isn't he? From Top Coppers, he's doing all right. I should get him on. He's doing well, isn't he? I saw him on. He's on Catherine Ryan's thing. Oh, didn't he get married to Sarah Pascoe as well? I heard. Doing well. He's doing well for himself. Unlike some people, he hasn't sat back going, when's Top Coppers coming back? I'm sitting here until Top Coppers comes back. He's got out there and done some other stuff, John. That's all I'm saying.
Fuck me. He's married Sarah Pascoe.
Yeah.
He's done.
He's in Catherine. He's very good in Catherine Ryan's.
Yeah,
thing.
Great. Good for. I'm very happy for him.
I feel like he does like a version of his Top Coppers character, but he's taking it.
You haven't seen Top Coppers? What are you talking about? You haven't seen it. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't even know what this show is.
I've seen a clip of it.
You've seen a clip. to be honest, again, you can't see it, so I can't really have a go at you because there's actually no way of fucking seeing it. Yeah, Steen's doing great. I'm doing absolutely fine. You know, I'm not.
I don't know why you've been so defensive.
I'm not being defensive, but I just get the feeling that every year you're going to ask me to do this, and I get the feeling because you're in a position of power. The day I could respond to you and go, do you know what? I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to buy a ticket for the day that you've asked me to do, and I'm going to sit in the front row. Christ, if I'm 50. And you're, I don't know how old you'll be then.
Old.
And you're asking me if there's going to be a second series of Top Fucking Coppers. If I've got the money, I'll make it.
Okay. Well, if I've got the money, I'll make it.
Oh, really?
I'll make it, but I want to be in. It's going to be Top Coppers, but there's going to be an extra copper, and it's going to be me, and I'm in every scene.
Well, no, apparently Steen's doing so well, he won't want to do it.
Well,
so
I'll do Steen's part. But
well, no, it doesn't work. That
bits.
Doesn't work because the he was, you know, he was tall and kind of he was the brooding one, and I was the.
I can do that.
Well, I think we're similar height.
Yeah.
So how can you do that?
I'll just act it. I'll act it.
You'll act taller.
Yeah.
What, you just looked? So even in the two shot, you'll still look down at my shoes, even though I'm looking at your face. And I'm thinking, why is he looking down at my shoes? Rich, this isn't a single, this is a double shot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm acting taller. Yeah, but he's looking at you. Oh, fuck me. It'd be like Gandalf. You know, he cried because Ian McKellen cried because he only did stuff on green screen. And he was like crying because he went, this isn't what acting is. I should be with people. You'd be like that, crying on green screen, going, where's John? In this.
We'll make it happen.
You know, you bought your tapes off the BBC. You could buy the costume and the set off them. And we can, I don't know, you live in the countryside, there's some space where we can.
We'll make it happen. I'm going to do improvisation, my dear Watson. You can be in that as well. I can get you in it.
Yeah,
improvisation, my dear Mark. Yeah. I'm bringing that back. I had an idea for another one I was going to bring up. What was I thinking about? I can't remember this. The Top Coppers. That's fit for the moment. Once we're making
a channel of stuff that got cancelled.
Yeah, we're going to bring it back.
You're in all of it.
Yeah, I'm going to be in it. Yeah.
Well, I'll take it at the moment. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll take it.
We'll pay you. It'll be better than TV rates. Look, I'm being facetious because you are actually on TV. You're on TV right now. You've got a series on TV right now.
I mean, I'm on the ropes. Early doors. I don't know, we're 15 minutes in and I'm absolutely on the ropes here. If we can joke about Top Coppers. I know how the next 10-15 minutes goes. We can joke about Top Coppers, but let's get serious for a second and talk about Guessable. I know how this goes. I've listened to every bloody episode.
I watched an episode of Guessable today, and you're in that. You're like Lloyd Grossman to David Frost in Through the Keyhole. That's your role. You're like Richard Osman to Alexander Armstrong in Pointless. You're like Alex Horn to Greg Davis in Taskmaster. What you're most like, though, is nobody to Richard Osman in House of Games. That's what you're most like.
Well, as
you play the role that in House of Games, Richard Osman doesn't bother having the bloke there.
Look.
That's what it's most like.
As I said to you, if I'd been asked to do any television over the past 5 years, if someone had said, John, would you like to do Taskmaster? Would you like to go on House of Games? I'd have then realised, when I was filming episodes of Guessable, the similarities. But the truth is, out of spite, I've never watched anything because I'm thinking, well, if they don't ask me, I'm not watching it. And, yeah. I mean, I don't know what the legal...
I think it's good. I think you are...
I don't know what the legal...
There's a couple of rounds that are a little bit like House of Games.
I have no idea.
What happens on TV is like, you know, what's interesting, both Taskmaster and House of Games, which in a way you could say, you know, Guessable, is like those two shows had met and had a child and created another show. Both of them were met resistance from the TV companies. And then when they're successful, then people want to make other things a bit like them. But seriously, if I can be just serious for a moment, John, you're very good on it. It's a very entertaining and very funny show. It's a show where comedians and celebrities mess around, and do stupid games. And that's what's happening a bit on the telly at the moment. That's the only fucking work I get. I'm on the proper Taskmaster, by the way, John, I should just say. I'm on the actual Taskmaster.
Well, I mean, you're the bloody shark jumping over. You're the shark in Appy. I'm thinking to myself, well, I've never been asked to do it, but at least Richard Erin ain't been asked to do it. You see that trailer happen, you're like, well, there we go. That's it. I imagine you had a lot of fun. You got paid a fuckload of money.
Yeah.
And timing couldn't be better as we go into a second lockdown. You're absolutely laughing, Richard. Whereas Guessable was on a channel which even the exec doesn't have. So
I watched it. You can watch online. You watch online, and the nice thing is the advertisers respect it so much there aren't even any adverts on it. I think the advertisers have gone, look, we don't want to spoil this by putting adverts in the middle. So it goes to advert breaks, and then there are no adverts, and that's the respect that the advertisers are holding for you and the work you're doing.
What, does it go straight?
It goes to an advertising break. And, you know, like you watch anything else online, goes to an advertising break and there's four or five adverts in it. It goes to an advertising break, then it comes straight back to the show. It's good, man. People should watch it. I watched one whole episode all the way through. And what I liked about it is the final round, the whole game, it's got a unique selling point. The whole game, all the answers feed into guessing the identity of something else at the end, right, John? I'm not taking the piss. It's good. I love games. Look, it's the only way to get on TV now.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, a pandemic wiped out every bit of work I had. And then you get a call going, we're filming 8 episodes in 4 days of a guessing game. Simon, I'll pay you to do that. It's basically, I have a box in the corner of the studio. And every answer given to each game during the episode relates
to the obliquely. It relates in an impossible way to get the person. It's impossible to answer it.
To the person in the box. So at the end, Sarah would go, right, teams, all the answers were this. think about basically everything mentioned in the show is linked to the person in the box.
It's clever. It's a clever twist.
And so then it's who's in the box. And, you know, I don't think I'm revealing too many trade secrets. They, it was guessed a few times.
All right. Okay.
So, you know.
And even if you're winning the game, if you get that last question, then you've won the game. That's what it's so like. It trumps the whole thing. It's good. You're very good on it, John. It's lovely to see you on the television where you, I'm not going to say belong, because I think you belong in a very fringe theatre performing your weird comedy. But it's nice for you to get out of there and be on the television.
Oh, man, I love it.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not slagging the programme off, because in the event that there's a second series.
Oh, no, exactly.
I'm very happy to come on. It's right in my right up my street. You have to do impressions. You have to do draws.
You've got to do impressions.
Good. It's absolute. I love it. But it's sort of just weird the way TV works. It's just weird the way commissioners work, and that they you know, they'll say no to something, and then something happens. They go, "Oh, we'll do that. Yeah, now we'll do it. We'll do something else that's like that," rather than thinking, "Let's do the thing that's." You know, let's take the punt on it. It doesn't matter. I'm drunk. You met Eamon Holmes on Guessable as well.
You ever met him?
Yeah, he interviewed me about my emergency questions book. And I said to him before the interview, it was all live interview. I said, look, if you're going to pick out questions from this book, just be careful. Some of them are pretty rude. So just read through before you read them out. Just check them. It was this book here. Where's it gone? It was the original hardback. He opened it up and goes, "Are you the postman or the letterbox?" Brilliant questions. Like, are you the postman? But he was perfectly okay. But you know, you do that when you go to those, when you're doing that thing where you're going on the radio shows. You know, even with this book, which all you have to do is read two pages of it and you know what it is, right? You don't, it's not like a novel. And even with that, you know, they haven't looked at it. And so that was him going, "Oh, look, it's I know it's full of questions," and then just reading questions. They haven't even looked to go, I'll just underline one question I'm going to read out just to make sure it's fine. No. So he does his job. He's a professional man.
He didn't even know. He was Googling Sarah Pascoe in the makeup chair.
Right.
And a picture of Catherine Ryan came up, and he went, "Oh yeah, I know who that is. It's the American one." Well, you know, he's mad. He is.
What happened? There was something. What happened? Did he mistake you for someone else? What's the story?
Basically, his episode record, he walked off set. One of the games is you've got three people have a box. Yeah. And one of them has something in their box, and the other two are lying.
Yeah.
So Sarah went, "Open your box, Eamon." And he opened his box, and he looked in it, and he said, "I don't know what it is." And he closed the lid. And everyone's looking at him like, "What the hell's going on?" So Sarah goes over, looks in his box, and she went, "Well, you do know what that is." So she sits down, and he just goes, I want to speak to a producer, please. I want to speak to a producer. And he just sits there and he walks off set for 5 minutes. I went over to Sarah and I said, what the fuck's in his box? What's upset him? And it was a bit of paper that said a guidebook to Basingstoke. And apparently he'd gone to the producer and went, "I've never been to Basingstoke. I don't even know where the hell it is. How am I supposed to come up with what's in a guidebook to Basingstoke?" The guy was like, "Well, it's just a game. Make it up." He went, "Well, I don't know what it is." Even though someone later found out where he lives, his train would have gone through the Basingstoke. Anyway, afterwards, I'm walking back to my dressing room. I went, "All right, see you later, Eamon." And he went, "Are you sure I've never met you before?" And I'm like, "Never met you before." He went, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Are you sure I didn't interview you on this morning as Father Christmas?" And I went, no, that ain't me. And he went to me, well, if the work ever dries up, you're Father Christmas. And, you know, I think I'd have been in my rights to, like, tell him the fuck off or something. I just walked off. I was like, what the fuck's going on? He's mad. Has he interviewed me on This Morning as Father Christmas? And then that week, he interviewed a Father Christmas on This Morning, saying that Christmas had come early. And he must have thought, I don't know, I was like, has he asked this guy on this, you know, has he asked this guy who's come in dressed as Father Christmas? Oh, nice to see you again. That game show was a laugh. It's like, what the fuck are you talking? I don't know if he was power playing. I don't know if he was driving. I don't know what was going on. If the work dries up, you're Father Christmas. Jesus
Christ. I think you could be Tim Allen in the Santa Claus just as he's on his way to becoming Father Christmas. That's what you could be. You could be like the, one of the,
he's,
you
know, one of the me,
intermediate
he's
stages.
Me, this show's shit. You're shit. You're not going to have any work at Christmas, mate, but don't worry. You're Father Christmas. The way he lent in. He's a big guy as well.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. I mean, this guy's been on TV every day of my life, I think, for about 4 hours. But he's done more TV, I think, you know, I don't know, top five people that have done loads of TV. Him, yeah. Wogan, probably. Wogan did a lot.
No, not anymore. That's...
Well, no. Obviously.
You're just going for Irish people. You're just going for the Irish people who are on TV.
Dermot O'Leary, he's done X Factor.
Dara O'Brien's on all the time.
Dara O'Brien's on all the time. Jimmy Carr, he must have done it. Jimmy Carr's done a lot of TV.
Jimmy Carr's done a lot of TV, but not over as long a time period as Holmes.
No, but that's Holmes' trick. Maybe. Holmes goes, yeah, I'm on TV, but you're all idiots. You do half-hour shows, hour shows. I'm on for 6 hours every morning. I don't know.
Good. No, it's good, man. It's good. Hey, look, I'm just drinking some whiskey, and that's, Chris, that's a great little, you could cut to the thing that you've got to put in here when we do the podcast. Hello there, it's me, Richard Herring, with a little bonus podcast in the middle of the podcast, courtesy of our sponsor, the Glenlivet, the original Speyside malt. Like me, it's original by tradition, and I'm very excited to be joined by a professional mixologist from the Glenlivet. It's Jenna Murray. Even more excitingly, she's in Chicago. Even more excitingly, she's in her kitchen in Chicago. It's very international, this podcast. Hello, Jenna. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's my absolute delight to talk to you. I'm very excited about whiskey, especially malt whiskey. Are you described as a mixologist? Is that an official term? Is that a proper job, or is that just a made-up thing?
I'm a bartender.
Okay.
But I am a represent the Glenlivet here in the States, and we do all kinds of things. We do education, we make drinks. So yeah, it's a great job. It's a dream job, actually.
Fantastic. Now, I'm here to talk to you about making cocktails with delicious and superior malt whiskey, which seems to me, I'm a traditionalist, and that's, I've always been told I drink malt whiskey absolutely neat, and there's always a debate about whether you can put a bit of water and whether it's better with a bit of water or a bit of ice. So to add other stuff, what's your feeling about adding just water to begin with? Do you think I should be adding a drop of water?
Yeah, I think that I agree with you. It's a timeless debate centered on neat, water, and eventually then ice. And my thing is to each their own, but with a drop of water or even a little bit of ice, especially with whiskeys with a higher proof, you get an opportunity to really open up that liquid and change it multiple times throughout your drinking experience. So again, yes, very traditional to drink neat, but at Glenlivet, we're all about breaking traditions, like you said. So a little bit of water and maybe some ice sometimes never did anybody wrong.
Okay, well, I'm going to give that a try. I have heard it does improve things. We'll see. But I make cocktails sometimes with whiskey, old fashions and such, but you generally use my blended whiskies rather than my malt whiskey, and you're going to tell me different than that.
I am. Single malt actually is a great addition to cocktails. You know, it's a shift I've seen in the past 5 years working for the Glenlivet that it's really flexible, especially some of our marks that we're going to use today to make drinks. So just like maturation and whiskey, it's really important that when you are creating cocktails, though, we never mask the aromas and flavors of the whiskey itself. We just add to them and amplify their flavors.
Well, give me a couple of examples of what we could do as a cocktail.
Perfect. So the first cocktail we have today, I'm just going to get some ice in my glass here, is one for summer or winter if you want to make it later when the weather turns and it's a little bit colder outside. But you just make it in your tall glass, or we like to say highball glass here in the U.S. And it is called the Golden Storm, which is made with the Glenlivet Founders Reserve. It can be a winter warmer or a summer long drink, but this one's got a nice zing of ginger to it. And I think ginger pairs perfectly with Founders Reserve and its flavor profile and its creamy texture. So you just, like I said, tall glass with ice. You're going to add 50 mls of Glenlivet Founders. And then we're going to add 20 milliliters of lemon juice. And I, of course, as the mixologist, fresh squeeze that lemon juice at home. Right. And then we're also going to do 25 milliliters of rich ginger syrup, which I also made at home. And that you just take your ginger root, juice it, and then mix it with an equal parts combination of sugar and water. And then you're going to stir that up, incorporate those flavors, and then we're going to top that with some soda water for a nice, refreshing drink.
Okay.
And I am lucky enough to have some candied ginger, so I'm going to use that as my varnish.
Lovely. My goodness, that looks I wish I could come to Chicago and drink that. I'm going to give that a try myself. And have you got another one for us?
I do. So the next one is coming with our newest innovation. Like I said, we're all about breaking traditions at the Glenlivet. So we've really gone over the top with this one, the Glenlivet Caribbean Reserve, which has been selectively finished in barrels that held Caribbean rum before. So it has a really nice, creamy, fruity nature to this scotch. So we're going to switch from a high ball or tall glass to a rocks glass, fill that up with ice, and the more fun the glass, the better, because we pay tribute to the classic tiki drink, a Mai Tai, with this one, except we're changing up the name here to a tartan tiki, which is a great little fun play on tiki drinks. And who doesn't like rum and tiki, right? So we're going to do 50 mls of the Glenlivet Caribbean Reserve straight into that rocks glass again. No need to get out your shaker or your bartender tools if you have them. Perfect. And then we're going to add 25 milliliters of pineapple juice.
I was growing a pineapple in my house, but it died.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. And then for spicy, right? We're all about balancing drinks. We want to make sure we have the perfect amount of a little sweet, a little sour, sometimes a little spice. So we're going to add a couple dashes of Angostura.
Nice.
Which is a great modifier for all kinds of cocktails. It really brings a lot to the table. A little goes a really long way. And then last but not least, we're just going to top that with some peach sparkling water. And all about the garnish, because your nose hits the glass first when you're drinking cocktails. So you're going to just add a little orange slice. And there you have it, tartan tiki.
Amazing. Well, those are two fantastic cocktails made very quickly. And I'm going to go downstairs and make them myself right now. That we're out of time, but thank you very much to Jenna Murray in Chicago. Thank you very much to the Glenlivet for sponsoring our podcast. Do remember to drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for more information. Thank you very much, Jenna. That was fantastic.
Thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cheers.
What whiskey is that?
This is Glenlivet. This is 12 years old Glenlivet.
Wow.
They sponsor the podcast. Oh, look, it's like it's part of It's on Mars. They have sponsored the podcast. Going into that bit is a bit where. I'm going to talk to a lady who does cocktails. Well, I've done it already. I've already talked to her. And then that goes into the show. And it'll be seamless now because I'm just drinking whiskey. I think it's a little bit too late into the show, but we'll make it work. We'll have to make this a long show. We started a bit late, so it's not too bad.
Do you send guests a bottle?
I can send you a bottle if you like, John. They gave me four bottles. I would have done it for four bottles of whiskey. That's the thing. They didn't realise.
Four?
They didn't realise. I'd have gone five, and they'd have gone four, and gone, okay.
Four. They lose four. Four gets lost in a stock take.
We might have to cut that bit out, but we might not. Let's see.
What are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading at the moment?
Yeah.
I have just read Michael Ian Black's book, A Better Man, which I read because he was the guest a couple of weeks ago. I'm just going to read Nell Scovell's book again, which is a brilliant writer who wrote, she came up with Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, yeah.
And she wrote the Simpsons episode, Blowf, the two fish, Wayfish, Blowfish, one of the early ones about the Blowf. I think it's the one where Homer eats a bit of fish and thinks he's going to die.
Fantastic.
I think that's her one. It's either that one or the one with three eyes. Anyway, she writes for The Simpsons, and her book is amazing. I've read it before, but I'm going to read it again as she's going to be my guest in a couple of weeks. And I do recommend you tune into that one because she's going to be awesome. It's another I'm getting people from transatlantic places, literally America, because that's the most transatlantic place you can get. So I've been reading that. What are you reading?
The reason why I asked is I have a book which I've been unpacking some boxes and hang on, it's over here. Also, apparently, you know, speaking of the Atlantic, when you're salting pasta,
yeah,
it should be salty as the Mediterranean, not the Atlantic.
Okay, I don't put salt in any food that I cook. Or any food that has been cooked. I don't use salt at all, except on maybe fish and chips. That's it. But
do you eat salted butter?
Yeah, but I don't put salt in it. I'm not saying I never eat salt, but I don't put salt in anything. If I'm cooking, I don't put salt in. If I've got something,
what are you
going to
do when you're old? Because that's all you can taste.
Well, then I'll start putting salt in, maybe. But I don't. You know, if you don't have it, you don't miss it. I did when. When I was a kid, my mum put salt in everything. I'm sure when I started cooking stuff for myself, I put salt in things, but I don't put salt in anything now. And as a result, I will live for 1,000 years.
Old people put salt like sauce, don't they?
Yeah.
They sprinkle it over the... Anyway, this book here.
Yeah.
I was unpacking, I thought of you here. Have you heard of a book called... It's by a guy called Gay Talese. It's called The Voyeur's Motel.
I have not heard of either of those things. Gay Talese, The Voyeur's Motel. No, I haven't.
Right.
Is it about me? Was it that time I stayed in the motel and I felt someone was watching me? Was he making notes?
Well, Gator Lees is like, he's an author of like, not an author, sorry. He's a journalist, like, you know, like gonzo journalism.
I do,
Hunter S. Thompson kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He got a call one day from this bloke going, "Will you meet me? I've got something that I think is very interesting that opens the door to the human mind." So, you know, Gator Lees is like, "Yeah, I'll turn up, meet you." Right. This guy hands over about 500 pages of handwritten notes. This guy owned a motel, and he basically went up into the roof of the motel and drilled holes in all of the rooms.
Right.
And made notes over five, 10 years. And he didn't do any, he wasn't sexually aroused by it. He just made notes about how people had sex. And he handed over these notes and went, "Do you want to write a book about it? Do you want to, you know, you could do what you want with it.
Inform the authorities and have you sent to prison?"
No, but look, there's pictures of him. And it's genuinely a fascinating book.
Okay.
In that.
There's a Netflix documentary about this called Voyeur, Latchmore tells me on chat room.
Oh, is there?
Mm. Well, that's what Latchmore says. I don't know how trustworthy they are. They could just someone else is saying it. John T652. I trust him. He's saying it too.
Oh, right. Well, watch that because it's fucking mad. And also, it's just depressing because everyone having sex is like, it's just crap. And he just writes like how boring everyone is and how sad it is. And the bloke would get up and just have a wash and it lasts for minutes. But then that's the beauty of it, in that it is absolutely real life.
Yeah.
It is completely real.
But, you know, if you're going to a motel to have sex, you're probably not, you know, you're not pulling out all the stops, are you?
I once went to a hotel with my then girlfriend, both living at home, and the guy went, "I've booked it," and he goes, "There's no room here. You've got to go to our sister hotel." I'm like, "What are you all about? I booked a room here." He went, No. "You got to go to the other one." So I'm like, "What the hell?" Anyway, we got a cab there. It was like, you know, a mile away. The guy went, "Right, here's your room. Your lock doesn't work, but don't worry. There's a guy watching 24 hours. And he just pointed to this bloke sat at the end of the corridor, just sat down on a chair looking at me. And so we shut the door and went, "What the fuck? We can't lock the door." Oh, my God. But, you know, when you're, how old was I? I don't know, 19? You just kind of think, yeah, it's probably quite normal to be moved to hotels and there's no locks, but don't worry, there's that guy. Can you see him down there? Yeah, he'll make sure no intruders come in. Well, I'm not really worried about intruders, it's more him. Yeah, don't worry about him. Well, who's he? Just don't worry about him. Awful hotel, yeah. Awful hotel. God, man. You look back at where places you stay.
Well, as a comedian, you stay in lots of... I've stayed in a place... I was in Lincoln and my car broke down and I had to find someone. Literally, it was like Bethlehem on Jesus's birthday. Everyone was full. And I got a room that cost £15, including breakfast. And it wasn't that long ago. It was like in the noughties. But it was...
15 quid?
It was not that long ago. It wasn't like the 1980s. It was £15 in 2005, maybe. £15, including breakfast, in a room above a pub. And it was... like the door had clearly recently been kicked in and slightly repaired.
Oh, Christ.
And there was just noises of shouting men all night of these people who stay in this £15, basically a homeless hostel, I'm guessing, where if, you know, you've got your 15 quid together, you begged off the streets. And then if you want, you can go down and have I mean, what would you get for your breakfast? I mean, the breakfast, if it's 15 pounds.
£15 was surely for the breakfast, that room.
But a proportion of it has to be for the room, including the sheet. I mean, it's just very difficult to see where they made their margins on £15. I can only imagine they did it by not cleaning any sheets. Oh, dear. Well, happy days. Let's ask you an emergency question. How do you feel about that? I've got a new emergency question. I've only asked one person this.
Oh.
You're the second person I'm going to ask.
Who else did you ask?
Stevie Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
Last week.
Brilliant.
How many graters do you own in your house or flat? How many graters? And do think carefully about it, because anything that can be used for grating. So I thought I had two. But then I thought, oh, no, I've got that bowl that you can grate on top of as well with a little grater attachment. And I've got a blender that you can grate with. So I think I've got at least four, probably a couple of other. But I reckon I might have five or six. It's just a gauge of how successful you're being in your career, this as well, how many it is.
Well.
Do you have a grater?
Well, yeah. Well, I've got.
All right. No, I'm not going to assume you've got a grater. But that's the presumably.
Well,
the
grater I've got has four sides of different edge.
Oh, well, that counts as one. That counts as one grater. What, four sided grater?
Well, that's four. No, that is four graters.
More because like the four sides have a couple of those sides have slices and they have different grades of grater on them.
Yeah, you've got the Parmesan one.
So is that six? There's very small holes, but sometimes there's a slicer on the same side as that. The top part is Parmesan, and then there's a slicer thing underneath it.
You got Parmesan, cheddar.
Oh, it counts as one. It's one.
All right. Well, I've got two then. I've got two. I've got that one.
You're doing all right.
And I've got a thing to grate your feet.
I've got one of those as well. I've got my wife hates the, but she hates the fact that I pick up my feet all the time. That's my main hobby. That's what you don't
wear
let
socks?
Them know to. When I'm not shod, when I'm unshod and unsocked, unstockinged.
What's the most, considering you spent £500 on a jumper?
Yeah.
What's the most expensive socks you've ever bought?
I just bought a pair of pants for £33. I know that wasn't what you asked.
One pair?
But I just, one pair, £33. I could have got three. These are posh pants. And I just thought, I want to see whether these pants are worth £33.
Are you wearing them now?
I'm not wearing them now. What I'm wearing now is some old pants. And what's happened with all these pants I bought about 3 or 4 years ago, all of them have started to degrade just in the perineum area for some reason. There's a hole about that big in a lot of my pants, just right betwixt the ball area and the arse area. Yesterday, I wasn't wearing these ones yesterday. The pair I was wearing yesterday, stuff started popping out. I thought, I was sitting in my pants. Stuff started popping out, and I thought, right, I have to throw those ones away. That's the decision I make on pants. They have to degrade to the point where they've gone that far.
I don't know what I'm more depressed about, whether I'm listening to this or that I've actually heard you talk about this a number of times before.
Not this exact problem. I have an issue because I've bought some new pants. One of them is this 33. I bought one pair of £33 pants, and then I bought like some £10 pants, which is still quite expensive for pants. But you know,
what
nice
make
pants.
Are they? £33.
Paul Smith. You get a pack of three for about £33, or you can get like one pair of super duper pants.
I got
I'm not sure they're three times as good. We'll see. Time will tell. Maybe they don't degrade in the perineum area, but I won't wear the new pants until the old pants have disintegrated. Because I don't, so I would rather.
What, till you've just got the elastic band? Or do they all have to disappear?
No, the minute yesterday I was sitting in my, in the lounge with my wife watching telly, and I'd taken my trousers off just for, you know, comfort. That's what happens when you're 53, wasn't a sexual thing. And one of my testicles popped out through the hole, and I thought that's too far.
That's it.
And then I said to my wife, "Do you like that? Is that sexy?" And she said no. And then I said, and she said, you have to throw those away. And I said, oh, I'll throw these away, but all my pants are on the way to this state. But I'm not, whilst they're holding everything in, it's fine. But once things start flopping out, they're no longer pants. So I'll throw them out. But I, you know, I've got good pants that I could be wearing, but I feel I should get through the old pants first, especially in lockdown. I don't want to waste my good pants on lockdown. But even so, that's my conundrum. I've got cereal bowls that are a bit chipped around the edge, just a bit chipped. Yeah. And the question is, do you put those at the back of the cupboard and only use them on, you know, desperate occasions? Or, John, do you put them at the front of the cupboard and use them every time in case you drop them or they break and then you haven't wasted it, you haven't chipped a new bowl? What would you do in that situation? That's my question to you. Would you go for
the...
Would
he sits back and waits for my answer.
What would you do in that situation? Because that says a lot about a man.
No, but you use, like your pants, you use it for other stuff, don't you? So you kind of go, well, this is now a rag, which I can use if I'm painting and decorating, or if I need to block a pipe or something.
Yeah, I clearly remember one of my main memories of childhood is my mum using my dad's pants as dusters and things. Once they were passed there, under the sink, there was a load of my dad's pants. And that's one of my main memories of childhood. I will not use my Paul Smith pants. I'm not gonna insult them. They're expensive pants. They're not that good. They're not £30 good. And but once they're over in the bin with a bit of risk, maybe even bury them in the garden in a makeshift grave. Give them the respect they deserve. I'm not going to put them in a stuff them in a pipe. What are you doing with pipe pants in a pipe? And you haven't answered my question that I asked about bowls. You've gone into back to pants. I asked you about bowls.
Well,
and
you've got
judged that question.
You've got two
like
young
a politician.
You've got two young kids. So I don't know. Things are flying around. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't know. You smash it. I don't know. You smash it up. Make a mosaic
out of it.
Well,
that's what Joe Crawford. The only other person I've asked about is Joe. The balls is Joe Crawford. He said, "Oh, I would if it's the minutes it's chipped, I'd smash up and use it in the garden, or you'd do it in the garden." It's a perfectly serviceable. I'll bring it in. I'll bring it up next week. There's one that's a bit more chipped than the others.
Is it?
It still works as a bowl, but I say use that bowl. Use it until it breaks, because you
until
don't want to break a new bowl.
Everything. Everything you use seems to use the bowl till it breaks. Wear your pants till they disintegrate. Like everything has to wear down to the knob.
It does. That is life.
Well, yeah. I suppose
life is
so.
Degradation.
My dad, he shat his pants once at a parents' evening. And obviously, I didn't know until we're driving home, and he's crying with laughter. He can't stop laughing. And, you know, when you're a kid, your dad, well, my dad, he was always laughing. But, you know, when as a kid, you're like, you're looking at something that really makes adults laugh, and you're like, what the hell are they laughing? Like, I've not seen them like this before. He was going mad in the car because he'd shat himself. And, you know, when at parents' evening, they open the teacher's toilets. And like that's kind of an exciting thing that you can use a teacher's toilet. He took them off and shoved them behind one of the toilets because he just completely. And I remember it was my history teacher, and he just had to stand up and leave. And I was like, "Where the hell's he going? I don't know what had happened, but he completely shat his pants."
Yeah. Good.
Did you? Did you ever, when you had parents' evening, did you ever have a treat?
I didn't have a, only I did get a treat. What, did you get a treat after parents' evening?
Yeah, got McDonald's.
Did you?
Yeah, that was
yeah, we weren't allowed McDonald's.
Well, no, neither was I, that's why it was a treat.
But we weren't even allowed them as a treat. I'd say I was 16 the first time I had a Wimpy.
Really? What was a treat then for you as a kid?
Not being beaten that night with a belt. I got a pack of minstrels every Friday whilst I watched Captain Caveman. That was my treat.
Wow.
Every Friday. That was one pack of chocolate a week. I chose Minstrels, ate them watching Captain Caveman.
You remember those Minstrels, what were they called? They were released for about a couple of years. Nestle did them. There was like white chocolate in the brown shell.
Yeah.
Were they topsy-turvy? Topsy-turvy?
No, it wasn't called topsy-turvy. Something like domino or something. Vice versa, someone's saying. I think that might be right.
Yeah,
vice versa is the consensus. Entropy, someone has also said in the chat room, is what I was trying to say about the everything entropies, doesn't it? That's what life is. Everything entropies. That's a good title for this sweet show. I'll put that in.
Do you write your own notes for the podcasts?
Yeah, that's what I'm. These books.
No, not those. The ones on the ones on the phone.
Oh yeah.
Really? Yeah, they're quite in depth.
I have to try and remember the next day what happened, and I never can remember, and I don't want to watch it back. It really is a struggle. This one's going to be a terrible struggle to remember what's happened. I should be making notes as I go. Doesn't matter. No one reads them, do they?
I do.
Chris Evans put the wrong one up this week today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Someone did notice, to be fair. So someone's reading them. Put the last week's up on this week's. He's good apart from being quite incompetent. You having a nice time? I'm sorry I was rude to you. I was a bit rude to you earlier. I'd just like to apologise. And the other two times you've been on. I just feel like it was a bit rude.
No, I genuinely, I don't remember. No one can be rude to me.
No.
I don't know if you're similar, but anyone can say anything to me, really, and I'll just be like, all right. But it's probably a bit true, probably exaggerated for effect. Yeah, it's probably quite funny. Yeah, well done. I take it as a badge of honour.
Yeah.
That I can... the people I'm rude to are like... it's the people that you, like, when... I listen to your podcast. There are moments where you don't know whether you can say what you want to say sometimes because maybe the person in front of you is a massive star or something.
Yeah.
Whereas what you want is when I'm listening to you, you want you going in hard, just really no regrets, and then slowly pulling it back over an hour. So to be actually in it,
yeah,
is it's an absolute joy.
No, well, I you're one of my all time favorite guests. Out of the people who nobody knows who they are, they're definitely the best one.
Well, I remember when I was years ago thinking,
yeah,
oh, I'll never go on that show if he ever asked me because he's I only want to go on it when people know who I am. And then the years went by and I thought, well, I don't want people to know who I am, though.
I don't want people to know who I am. It's a terrible thing.
That's the worst thing. And
yeah.
I like the idea that, you know, I did Guessable, right? There were 34 guests on that thing. People like Claire Balden, people like... Martin Kemp, Eamon Holmes. I mean, if Eamon Holmes was played this, he'd go, who the hell is that guy? He'd go, what is this story? Where was he in the room? And he'd be like, he was the guy at the desk. What? I don't remember him. Yeah, and you said this to him. Did I? Fuck me, I don't remember this. Laura Whitmore. You know, these people don't know. They're saying hello to me. It's like, yeah, I'm the guy in the corner. Right, okay. I've got the box. Yeah, mate, you do. You know, we've all got to make a living somehow. All right, mate. But thank God that came in. I have to be honest here. With this pandemic, you know, I was going to go to Melbourne, do the comedy festival out there, I had a week of a tour to go, Edinburgh, all of it gone. So joking aside, I'm extremely grateful that somebody phoned up and went, we thought of you to do this show. And
you're good. It's a good choice.
Will you do it?
Pasco's good to you, but everyone's good on it.
Alan Davies. I've never met Alan Davies before in my life.
I think it's such... the only thing with Alan Davies, and I think he's great, is it felt like quite a fresh... younger... You know, I know that you're all like in your 30s and 40s, but it feels like you're the new generation of comedians. And I feel like maybe they should have had a younger person being the other show host, or someone else who was a newer person. But he's good. He's good. But I understand why they went for Alan.
Yeah.
And he's very good in it. But that's all I would.
When does Taskmaster start again?
Tomorrow. It's got quite a lot of old folk. It's got...
Richard, you know how showbiz works. You need the viewers.
You do,
and
you
people
do.
People are tuning in to see Alan and Sarah. That's the truth
of
it.
That's true.
And so I was very grateful he was there, because also, you know, when someone like him is on a show, and Sarah, and, you know, Darren as well is fantastic.
It's great as well.
It makes people go, oh, yeah, I'll do that. There are a lot of people there quite... There are a lot of people there that probably can't get booked for QI, but really like Alan Davies. And so they think, oh, yeah, nice way of meeting him. But, I don't know. I, like you said, I don't know how TV works.
Well, no one knows.
It was in the same... the day before we recorded it, the studio had been used for Piers Morgan interviewing Colonel Tom. And I was in Colonel Tom's, I was in his dressing room.
Yeah.
And in the bin was an empty can of full fat Coke. And I just imagined, I was like, he must have been flying. I can't imagine Colonel Tom drinking a, I couldn't imagine him drinking a full fat Coke.
He's 100, he doesn't give a fuck anymore.
I know, but that's what made me laugh. I was looking at it like, this must have sent him crazy. Like the idea that they're like, what would you like, Colonel Tom? Can of Coke, please. All right. We'll be back in a minute, yeah? Drink that. They come back. Chair's empty. Where the fuck's he gone? He's doing Strictly in the next room. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fun that when you get... We had the bit, we followed Liam Herring, and I can't remember the name of the guy. He's an Irish singer, and I think Father Ted took the piss out of him.
Daniel O'Donnell. O'Donnell.
Yeah, well, whoever that is, and he was a big star, and his bin was just full of ripped up fan letters. And like maybe he'd responded to them all. Or maybe just gone. It was just like a clean tear. Massive bulk.
Wait, in the envelope?
I can't remember. I just remember that. I wouldn't like to say if I'm slightly libeling, because he maybe he'd read them and ripped them up. Once he'd replied to them, it just struck us, and we were just starting out on our careers, and he was obviously doing pretty well, and obviously fucked off with all the attention, and we were not getting any fan mail.
And I always make sure
we just found it funny that you fuck you.
I always make sure whenever I leave a dressing room or anything like that, the bin. You know, the bin is where people can learn about you.
Yeah, well, that's it.
And the toilet. You just got to make sure they're, you know, just make sure they're pristine, yeah.
Flush the bin contents down the toilet. That's what I'd do, just to be safe.
I did a gig once, and I was backstage, and there was no toilet, and I was absolutely going mad. So I just had to piss in a bottle and then put the bottle in the bag. Because I thought I'll throw it out on the way home. And I forgot about that thing for about a week. And then I opened it. I remember opening it up thinking, I couldn't remember what the hell it was. And then you just had to get rid of it. It's like when you cook something with oil. You shouldn't pour it down the sink. No. So you got to freeze it or something and then throw it in the bin. But I'm not freezing a bottle of my own piss.
You can put piss down. I mean, don't put it in the sink. Put it in the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
It's only wee. If you've got a toilet at home, right? Don't yeah, pour it down your sink. I mean, it'll probably clean your sink
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I forgot, though. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, toilet.
I remember one New Year's Eve, this bloke was cooking breakfast. It was like a party. And we're all washing up. And he went and put all the beans down the toilet. And we were like, what the hell are you doing? And he was like, well, I always put my beans down the toilet. Because he said, it was like, if you put it in the bin, it would just be soggy. But, yeah, it's just beans, isn't it? And I've never forgotten that. I mean, I don't do it, but no. Good idea.
Put it down the toilet. It's just, it's going to go down there, isn't it? And beans just pass through pretty much unchanged.
Well, so yeah, you can just shove, you know.
Just shove out the middle, man.
Shove cobs of corn down there, you know. it'll all go through. Christ. It's come to this. How long is this bloody thing? I mean,
we've done enough. I mean, we can stop any time.
Well, but, no, you know, I'm quite enjoying it. Do you remember the early days of your podcast? Do you remember the early days where, I don't know if there wasn't restrictions, but you'd go on for ages?
Yeah, we used to have one guest.
And yeah, that was it.
We'd do like 2 hours probably, or certainly 90 minutes. And then we only ever have one guest a week anyway, obviously. But we tried to keep it in as a tight hour just in case we were to do anything in the second half. It's hard to keep up the pretense. Yeah, we tend to do an hour with the live shows now. But sometimes it creeps into 75 minutes. But yeah, I think it did get up to a couple of hours with some of those early ones. And I like it. It's nice because now I'm back to doing one a week. We can go on if you want. I mean, you know, I've got my wife waiting downstairs. She's been drinking wine. I've been drinking whiskey.
Yeah, she's really missing you sat there with your trousers off, a bollock peering through one of your crotchless pants. Is that sexy?
Is that sexy, a little bollock? Look at that, a little bollock. It's weird the way bollocks are not very sexy. I mean, they're sometimes used within sex itself. I mean, they obviously have a function within sex, and sometimes they are incorporated into sex. But they're not at all the things that are involved in sex. Bollocks are probably, testicles are probably the least sexy thing, would you say? I mean, they're not great to look at. They're difficult to manipulate.
I was. Are you circumcised?
I'm not. No. Are you? Sorry, I'm just. There's a fly here. I'm not clapping you.
I was circumcised when I was 25.
Were you?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that?
You sat back like there's a story.
Yeah, there is a story where you did a change of religion, or did you have a medical issue, or did you just think this foreskin is just getting in my way? Let's whip it off and see how things are. You can't go back. Well, you can go back, actually. You can.
Can you?
If you read my book, Talking Cock, there are people who dedicate their life to regrowing their foreskin. And one of the people who did that sent me about 200 pictures of his own penis. I would say to me and the female picture researcher of that book, too many pictures of his regrown. You basically sort of start stretching the skin out quite slow. So you can get it back if you're missing it, John.
No, I'm not missing it. It was a problem.
What was the cause of your...
It was too tight. It was too tight.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very common, actually. I remember telling friends, my brother, he got it done. It was a nightmare looking back. I remember when
mine's nice and loose, John. Mine's nice and loose.
Good Lord. Jeez.
It's just right. Just the right level of looseness. It's not like flapping around. It's just...
Well, how loose is it? But
it's the right level of... It's loose enough. It's not causing any problems.
It's loose enough.
If I'm running along naked, it doesn't fill up with air.
No.
If I'm swimming in a pool naked, it doesn't fill up with water. It just does its job. It's there. If there are brambles...
There's a naked bloke in the pool. Well, is his foreskin blowing up? No, it looks perfectly loose. Okay, leave him. Leave him be.
Back to your story of the...
No, there's no story. It was just, it was tight. It never... I didn't see the head of my penis till I was 25.
Right, okay. That's very late to realise that.
Well, no, it wasn't. I realised when I was 18 and I went to the doctor and then the doctor went, oh, no, I remember, I don't know why, but he went, I'll call you and book an appointment. And then I didn't call it. He called me and I said, oh, I've changed my mind. Because I was like, you know, it's obviously not a thing you want done. Funnily enough, my dad picked me up from the hospital after my operation and, like parents' evening, bought me a McDonald's. And I sat with my dad having a McDonald's.
I thought he'd shat himself. Like parents said, shat myself.
Right. How quick can you walk? Well, not really. I've just had half of my dick cut off. Yeah, well, we need to get out of it quick. I've shat my pants and I've shoved it down a cistern in St. George's. Let's go and have a Big Mac. Yeah, all right, Dad. Love you. No, I'm glad. No, but, you know, I think it's not talked about enough. You know, no one ever said to me, that shouldn't be happening. You know, maybe get it done. And it makes me think, if I ever had kids, would I get it done? You know, when, like, immediately.
Well, I mean, don't get done immediately. I mean, if you want to, it's...
In America, everyone gets it done, don't they?
Well, they do. I think that's changing a little bit, but basically, yeah. But it's still a surgical procedure, so there's still risk and bad things happen as a result of botched circumcisions. So it's a weird one within the Tom Rosenthal's done a show.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
he wore weights.
Right, yeah. Well, that's it. So you can try and pull it back. Did you have local anaesthetic, or were you knocked out for the procedure? Did they knock you
knocked
out?
Knocked out. I've been knocked out 4 times in my life. I've had my appendix out. I've had my foreskin cut off.
No.
I've had my tonsils gone.
There's hardly any of you left. It's amazing you're holding together.
I had an operation.
What's the fourth one?
When I was 13, I had an operation on my gums and my teeth.
Oh, yeah.
The canine was growing into the root of the... of the front tooth, so I had to go to St. Thomas's and they put me to sleep and opened up my gums. And then to show that the canine was growing straight down, they attached a gold chain and they cemented the gold chain on the tooth, which was still up in the gum. And so the gold chain dangled down where the gap was.
Yeah.
And so I had train tracks and then this gold chain just hanging down.
I mean, you must have looked quite hard. That's sounds like a kind of thing an extremely tough guy would do. Must have been quite intimidating.
Have chains hanging down from their teeth.
Yeah.
Like one of those bead curtains. Imagine trying to eat with just chains. Gold chains hanging down. Oh, fuck me. Terrible. But you just... Imagine that mouth trying to learn German for 5 years. Absolute nightmare.
Was it 5 years of having the gold chain hanging out your mouth?
No, about two.
Two years?
Because when you're a baby, have you ever seen that x-ray where your adult teeth are in your head?
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane, isn't it? Absolutely insane. But it was growing into the root of my front teeth.
I think they were just doing medical experiments on you, John. That doesn't sound like a thing. They put a chain in your mouth for 2 years. Sounds like it's the first stage of turning a human into a cyborg. They were working on that. Well, we've got to take your foreskin. Next, we're taking your foreskin off. We've got to replace it with this metal. We put a metal foreskin on. Your appendix.
Chain mail around your bell. All right. Yeah, sure. Okay. What's going to happen when I'm 35? Just a letter comes through. We've got to take all your nails off. All right. We're going to put everything that you don't need is gone. You don't need your appendix. That's only to eat grass.
Yeah.
I remember I was in absolute agony with appendicitis is one of the worst pains you can have. And my parents were thinking of selling the house at the time. And I remember a family walked into my bedroom looking at the room whilst I had appendicitis. No one believed I was in so much pain. Tonsils, I don't know what you need that for. Just hangs there.
No. They're just taking off all the superfluous.
I know.
You don't need a foreskin. They'll take your nipples. They're coming for your nipples next, John. John, we don't need your nipples. You're a bloke. Let's take them off. Let's just slice them off. Let's take them off. Put a couple of chains there.
Some tassels.
We can pull them. They're just using you for experiments.
You're completely right. Yeah. My appendix, my foreskin.
You're seeing what? And they go, let's try and take his heart out. Oh, no, he needed that. It turns out he needed that. That was the thing. How much can we shave off a guy? It's like Robot Wars or something. They're just trying to shave off absolutely every excess bit of weight. Just kind of get it down to it's the basics. So you're still running, but there's no excess there. They're shaving it bit by bit. They're working out they can make a human as
a brain in a jar.
Yeah.
So you're saying that in a factory, not a factory, but in some kind of secret location, there's my there's a room that has my appendix, my tonsils, my foreskin.
Yeah. They might just be trying to remake you in a different room, just sneak you out bit by bit.
20 years' time, I'm going to walk past a bloke and be like, he looks familiar. As I wield a jar and a brain and eyes, I'm like, I can't, just the eyes kind of look up at the person pushing me. They're like, is everything all right? I kind of look over at this person. I'm like, I think that's me. It's a bloke with no eyes.
Oh, man. Look, we've done loads. We've done ages.
How long have we done?
We've done I think we started about 5 minutes late, so about an hour and 20, so hour 21 maybe. We can push on. We can push through. You know, we've covered most of the questions I had for you. I kind of felt
I was in Harry Hill brought back Stars in Their Eyes.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, I remember you were like his.
I was in every episode of that.
Yeah.
That went out in January, right?
Yeah.
And that was my first TV appearance. I don't know what the hell that thing was you mentioned earlier, but that was my first thing. On Christmas time of that year, 2015, I got a text going, I've just seen you on TV. I'm like, oh, really? What am I in? I was on It'll Be All Right on the Night.
Right.
I don't think anyone has, from their debut to being on It'll Be All Right on the Night, done it as quick as I did.
You wouldn't be impressed by you fucked something up and so you got on It'll Be All Right on the Night?
I just think from... From debut,
in 10 months.
In 10 months, 11. To have Dennis Norden going, look at this chap. I can't remember what I'd done. I'm glad I was on it when he was doing it, though. I don't know. Does someone do it now?
Probably. I think probably Harry Hill. Harry Hill seems to have taken over most of those jobs. Who is it? He does All Right on the Night.
Is it Walliams?
Yeah, it might be actually.
I think it might, and it's just voiceover now. He's not. He doesn't have the clipboard or anything.
No, you've got to have the clipboard, haven't you? You've got to have the clipboard sit there.
The thing with Dennis Norden, as you know, I'm sure, is how incredible a comedy writer he was.
Of course, yeah.
But growing up, as I did, he was just the bloke who took the piss out of people. And then as you get older, you're like, Christ, this guy was like, you know, he was one of the best comic minds of the 50s.
Yeah.
And 60s and stuff.
I mean, he's lucky that he managed to have a career that went, you know, then he became a TV celebrity. You forget everything that's happened. No one's going to remember Guessable by the end of 2020. The thing, like, now, but also, like, now, if you do a TV show, there's so many TV shows, it's so hard to even break through and be that one that people actually watch, you know, that people have heard of. So you can even do, like, two or three series or something, and, like, nobody, you know, if you went out in the street and said, hey, have you watched this? They go, most things. When you think about how much drama, because of all the channels and all the different streaming services, like Apple TV, who watches Apple TV?
I know, that's mad.
Nobody. And like all those things are on Apple TV. But go, this is really good. You go, yeah, I've got Apple TV. I've never watched it. Never watched it.
But I want to be on Apple TV.
You want to be or you don't want to be?
The thing about TV, no one gives a fuck if anyone watches it when they're making it.
Right.
Because you're getting paid. You're like, you do what you want. I've done my job. I'm out of it.
Wouldn't it be nice? But, you know, I think when I started in TV, there was the potential that you could do a show and people would watch it and people would talk about it and people would like it and it might lead to something. And now I feel, even if I wrote something that got onto TV, right? So I've written loads of things that haven't got onto TV. But even if you got made and you did a series, there's still every chance people go, yeah, you went down the street. Have you watched this? Watch this thing? No.
But your radio show, that's being groomed for TV, right?
What? Which one? Relativity?
Yeah.
I don't think so, really. I mean, they kind of come to me and say, would you do it like this? So they asked me if I would do it as an audience sitcom kind of thing. And I thought about it and thought, I don't really, it's not really what it is.
But that's.
So.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
If you get that right, that's the Holy Grail, I think.
And there are people who do. There are people, you know, there are some people doing great sitcoms that do work for a mass audience. But I just don't think that's what that sitcom is. It's like a sitcom about, you know, it's about observations about family life, but it's not, let's stick it in front of an audience and see if they laugh at this. You know, there's some jokes in it, but there aren't, it's not like, it's like jokes that people will laugh at in the situation comedy, not in an audience. You know what I mean? It's not like building up to laughs and building up to situations. Exactly. It might work, but I don't know. I just sort of think it's so much work. Even like with that now is written, and it would be reasonably easy to turn that into a TV show. It still feels like too much work.
Every episode,
I'm quite happy doing it on the radio. I'm quite happy doing it on the radio.
Every episode of 40 Towers,
yeah,
was filmed in 2 hours.
Right.
That explains a lot about its energy. You know, well, I think it was 6 months an episode to write.
Yeah, they took a long time on each episode,
and then they filmed it all each episode in 2 hours because that was literally what the studio gave them. It was like, well, you have to do it in 2 hours. And I think when you learn that, you think the energy of that show, the farce of it, obviously fed through the pace of how little time they had to do it. Just imagine 2 hours to put, you know. Also, with audience members, 2 hours is like, that's like a play.
Yeah.
They're not bored at all. They just go, yeah, great. That was mad. What's gonna, you know, what's gonna, how's this gonna come out in the edit? Which is
never mind. The bus box was a 3-hour record. So
that's,
you know,
what I mean. There we go. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Some kind of context.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, you know, there's good and bad things. I think the British model of, well, I heard you talking to Stuart Goldsmith about this today about how, you know, in the UK, like, comedians sort of feel like they've got to do everything themselves or it doesn't count. But if you go to America, everyone's working together. And if you see American sitcoms, they're put together by collaboration of people and so therefore can do 22 episodes. Though I've managed to do that more or less on my own with one, the only series I've ever got on TV. I did manage to almost write 22 episodes on my own. But, you know, it's that different approach, isn't it? In the
I just feel Americans are more, you know, I think a lot of the big movie star Americans who you think of all came from a sketch improv background. Your Will Ferrells, all the Saturday Night Live stuff, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, they all come from improv and sketch and working together. I was reading something actually today about British sitcoms and American sitcoms, which I don't know if I just read it today, so I don't know if I agree with it, but they said in American sitcoms, you want to hang out with them. So you want to go to Cheers and you want to sit and have a beer with all of those characters. And in British sitcoms, you like looking down at them and how they're struggling.
Yeah, might be some truth
in that. I guess there's no broad, you know, I'm aware that you could point out things and go, well, what about that? But I do think the best British sitcoms, you are looking on. And American sitcoms, they really do build it on you want to hang out.
Sure. You know, they could almost have filmed an episode of 40 Towers in the amount of time we've been talking. I bet occasionally they came in at 90 minutes. We've been going for, nearly 90 minutes. You know, it's nice. People don't have to. People can stop listening. As long as they've got through the bit with the whiskey advert in, that's fine.
This is where the numbers slowly creep up.
We're doing all right in terms, I can tell you, the people watching it live, it's stayed pretty consistent. That might be new people coming in saying, what's this? And they're, oh. But pretty consistent. Well done, John Cairns. People love you. The people out there love you. You're an extremely fine stand-up comedian. And your last show was all about knocking around in a flat on your own, wasn't it? Basically, the last stand-up show you did, more or less, which is, you know, must now be grimly ironic.
It was pretty much. Yeah. It's kind of what it was pretty mad, actually.
But that's so you would like to do that as a sitcom, presumably. Would you like to do a sitcom version of John Cairns, the stand-up guy in a flat?
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't pitched that, but, you know, the problem is, it's then, well, what's it about? It's like, oh, well, I don't really know. He doesn't really do much. It's like, well, sounds great. Not. I think if you think of Jacques Tati, right? He walks around and you don't know anything about him. You don't know where he lives, if he's got family. You don't know if he's like an alien who's just landed. And it doesn't matter because the situations are funny and although he is quite out of worldy, he's also very real in that we are him in the situation. And through his ignorance and, you know, it makes the normal life look abstract when you follow him. So that is what I like, and that's what I try and do in my stand-up. I mean, when it comes to writing sitcoms, I think maybe it's something I'd like to do, and it's something that I might take a different tact on completely and try and, you know, you look at, you know, you read Galton and Simpson scripts and you think, oh, I wonder who inspired them. And it's like people like N.F. Simpson, who was this playwright, and they read Chekhov and Ibsen. And you're like, fucking hell, you know, Stepton's Son is rooted in that stuff. So I don't know. When I'm writing stand-up, I think maybe you have to put on a different hat when, you know, when you read about Galton and Simpson, they go, the comedy, we worried about that. We didn't write comedies, we wrote dramas. The comedy came from the characters, not the situations. So, and that's different with stand-up. So I do, over the years, I have thought it's not as easy as just putting what I do on stage in a script.
Not necessarily, but you know, I think what's it, you are obviously someone who thinks and reads a lot and has a lot of references to draw on, a lot of, you know, all the stuff we just talked about in this. It just shows how educated you are. And that isn't what TV wants. So that's the thing. You know, if Galton Simpsons came along now, I think they'd find it very hard to get any of that stuff on, because people go, no, we want something simple and something that people will understand. But the thing is, you know, I did a very high concept sitcom, was my last sitcom, and they still said, what's it about? And so, like, you go, well, it's about this. They go, no, it should be about this. And you go, well, this is what it's about. And it was, you know, it was, they want to know, you know, they want to be able to define stuff so they can compare it to something else. But without realizing that everything that's successful is the thing that breaks the rules, and, you know, the things that make them, in the end, make them the big money and make them the big viewers, is get them the big viewers, is the original ideas rather than the stuff that's copied off other people.
Like, you know, Hancock, you know, does Magna Carta mean nothing to you? Did she die in vain? You know, just, you know, I mean, perfect. And yet, you could just imagine referencing Magna Carta. You get the feeling a producer or an exec would go, who was she?
Did she die in vain?
I did. I had to walk. Every day I walked past a real Magna Carta for 4 years when I worked in Parliament.
Yeah.
And I'd have to tell kids what it was. They couldn't give a shit. This means that you could get a fair trial if you do anything wrong. Right. All right. Let's move on. Habeas corpus? Habeas corpus? Habeas corpus? Saying that just over and over to 5-year-olds. What the fuck is he on about?
Well, John, we're going to, I think, you know, we've got to leave it there on and up. We've hit a height.
I've had a lot of fun, Rich.
I've really, really loved talking to you. I think you are. Look, it doesn't matter about. Look, TV's a dead medium. You can get all this. You can do what you need to do online. You don't need anyone else. I'll give you some money. We can do it.
Thanks.
So I'll sell this jumper and I'll give you the money. You can be the charity and you can make what you want to make. It'll be fine.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
No, man. It's always lovely to talk to you. I like it when, you know, it's fun, man. It's fun. These are, you know, no one else is like you. I really love talking to you, and it's really good fun just being rude to each other, but also cracking on with stupid ideas and seeing what happens. And then getting a little bit serious at the end.
Yeah, it did get serious. Got good, though.
Then it's fine. It's all right. That's what this podcast is all about. And like the people don't, us to you people at home, when it gets to the point that you've had enough, you listen to something else. Drunk Women Solving Crime's good. The Taskmaster has a podcast out. That'd be interesting. I'm on Taskmaster, John. It starts tomorrow, 9:00. For those people who are watching this live, tomorrow I've got Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun, and there's a new character, and I literally can't believe what it is. It's been delivered to me unsolicited in the post, and it is, you were literally going to shit. You're going to be like John Ken's dad when you see this. You're going to shit your pants at what has been delivered to me. I can't do it justice, is what I'm saying, but it's going to be in tomorrow's show, 7:30, 9:00. I'm going to do a watch along with Taskmaster, which I'll be doing every week, I think, if it works out okay. So if you're listening to this or watching this when it goes out, Join in on Thursday nights at 9:30 for Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun, twitch.tv/RK Herring. You can link your Amazon Prime account and give us money for nothing. It doesn't cost you a thing if you can be asked to come back every month and do that. It's where it's all at, John. Come on Twitch and do your stuff and people can give you money for free. It'll work. It'll all work.
I do a podcast.
Yeah. What's the podcast?
It's called Microscope.
Okay.
With Matt Ewins.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, yes, that's right.
It's hit and miss, but the when we hit, it's good. So everyone listen to that.
Listen to Microscope. Andy McH says, at last, it's brilliant. And come on Twitch, John. I'm telling you, it's your medium.
Is it? I don't know. I'm looking at
Out of all the people that I think
really
need to, and I think more comedians need to do it, but it suits long form weird stuff for sure. And improvised stuff. And it's good. It's good, man, and you can get some of Ian Amazon's money for free if you can get people to give it to you. And then you can make more stuff with it. We'll chat. Let's have a chat. We'll chat. This isn't a chat.
This wasn't the chat.
This wasn't the chat. This was just the prelude. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back next week. Oh, well, so next week is John Robbins, which you can still probably get somewhere online. I'll put some links up for you if you want to pay and give some money to Refuge. It'd be lovely if you did that. There'll be bonus content on that, and that will be out next week. Then coming up is Ed Gamble, Nell Scovell, and I'm doing some live gigs at the Ali Pally on the 12th of November. COVID allowing. COVID-19. I'm waiting for COVID-20. I reckon that's going to be the It's going to be the real humdinger. That's what I'm looking forward to. So thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause to the wonderful John Cairns. And watch Guessable. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Thanks for watching, kids. See you next time. You have been listening to Rahala Stapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, John Cairns. The music by Pest. I'm indebted to my producer and friend, Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you to everyone at Acast. Thank you to everyone at Twitch for all your assistance. Thank you to Donkey from Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun. He's the real genius behind all of this. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to rahalastapa.co.uk/300 and view next week's show right now, plus loads of extras, plus give money to Refuge. It's a wonderful thing. And go to twitch.tv/RK Herring and you can watch me in doing lots of different things, like playing snooker and doing Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun on Thursday nights. And I also do a thing with Taskmaster as well sometimes, so enjoy that. Thanks very much for watching and listening. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.